and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this Jeff Brohm cannot figure out how to beat PJ Fleck edition as a wild and hectic fourth quarter sees the Gophers emerge with a 34-31 victory. But before we introduce the third member of our podcast, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yes, once again, the Goal Line Club is sponsoring this season of Gopher Gridiron Radio. We appreciate them. Do check out their website if you have not. It is goalineclub.org. They do have events that are available. We'll talk more about those in more detail later. But do check them out. Find a way. If you're trying to find a way to connect with Gopher football and help them, you know, you could buy licenses, merchandise, etc. But, you know, it's going to be way more beneficial if you join the Goal Line Club. It's a very cheap, $100. So check it out, goalineclub.org.
So the third member of our podcast joining us, as he does for each and every one of these breakdown editions, is my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman and the smartest Gopher X's and O's mind in the entire space, Derek Burns. Derek, how are things for you today? And what did you think of that 34-31 victory?
Well, thanks for that intro, Ryan. I appreciate it. Happy to be back with you guys. I thought it was a good win for the Gophers. I thought Purdue was a solid team. I was impressed by the things that Purdue does on offense in particular. They're well coached. They had a good game plan. They used Rondale Moore, of course, you know, several plays to get him involved, but then it's really almost more about what they do with the rest of the offense and using him as kind of a decoy that really impressed me. So all in all, again, it was a good win for the Gophers.
Yeah, so let's get into this game. Obviously, a 34-31 victory for the Gophers. We'll probably get to the controversy that was the pass interference or pass interferences calls that were called, maybe should not have been called. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about when the Gophers were on defense. They gave up 31 points on the evening. Jack Plummer was 35 of 42 for 367 yards. Now, we really should have a little bit of an asterisk there because
why?
Because at least six of those were shovel passes.
Sure.
I always think that it's a little bit misleading. That's effectively a run in my opinion. But statistically it is given as a pass. So, the other thing to note is from a running perspective, Purdue has their best game running the ball with 25 rushes for 125 yards. Now, if we actually take some of those Rondale Moore, shovel passes, he was actually they ran the ball much more effectively than that, and obviously this is still a weakness for the Gopher defense, but you know, at the end of the day they were able to make some key stops and force some field goals, one of which was brutal, that barely made it about 5 feet off the ground and probably been blocked by their own O-lineman. But interesting day from the Gopher defense, Derek. You know, this is a multiple offense, and you got to cover them east and west. And at the end of the day, they're able to get the victory. What did you see out of this defense?
Well, I was pleasantly surprised at the game plan from the Gopher coaching staff. The Gophers were a lot more aggressive with their pass coverage than I guess I was anticipating, and that was really good to see. You know, as you mentioned, Luke, you have to defend the whole field against Purdue, so you're caught in this predicament where you have to choose whether you're going to play, you know, basically sit back and try and play coverage, in which case Purdue's going to try and attack the middle of the field, maybe run the ball a bit more than they do against other teams because they know that's where Minnesota struggles. And Minnesota didn't do that. They many times showed plus one in the box and run situations. Now, sometimes post snap, they bailed out of it and bailed into coverage, and that's the gamesmanship you see. But again, coverage-wise, there are many plays where Minnesota put their corners in island coverage, so gave them a lot of responsibility against, you know, some pretty good Purdue receivers. And, you know, they showed some aggressiveness. They blitzed pretty routinely. And, you know, again, want to give some credit to the Purdue offensive coaching staff. They took advantage of that. When anytime you blitz and dial up your risk reward, you're going to get burned a few times, and the Gophers did. That's part of what you do when you end up being more aggressive. And then again, the Purdue coaching staff knows how to use, you know, Rondale Moore effectively. So I thought it was a good chess match and a good battle, and I thought the Gopher coaching staff held their own. There are still many things to be worked out in run defense. and we can talk about that in more depth. But again, overall, I was pleased with the aggressiveness, and I think the pass defense is pretty good. The last thing I would say is the Gophers are, you know, whether this is a symptom of Purdue or whether they're just getting better each game, they're getting a little better on the pass rush. They haven't learned yet how to close on it and get a sack and, you know, complete it, but they're getting closer. And there were a few times they were just a step away from getting a sack or a hit on the quarterback or, you know, so seeing a little bit of a gain there as well.
Well, I'd note that for those of you who didn't know before the game, we learned just before kickoff, Boye Mafe, Minnesota's best pass rusher, he got bit by COVID, so he is out. So he missed the Purdue game, and he's going to miss the next two games as well. Same with Rashad Chaney. So for those of you looking for anything resembling a pass rush against Wisconsin or Northwestern, God bless you and Godspeed. Because I know, Derek, you're a little bit more optimistic than I am, and there were times where Minnesota would have one guy get close to Plummer, but then he'd just step up and no one is there. And 42 dropbacks and no sacks is not elite. Now, as Luke alluded to, some of those were those little shovel pop passes, and there was a lot of quick hitting stuff as well, but there was also too many times where Plummer had all day to throw and he ended up scrambling, and Minnesota would fell for his pump fakes as he was scrambling. And when was the last time? I remember a year or two ago, there was a quarterback that used to do that all the time. Do you guys remember who that was? Where they'd get near the line of scrimmage and they'd pump fake it and they'd get the defender up into the air and then they'd keep it. I don't know if you guys remember who that was or not. The name escapes me, but I think the defense was the defense. I wish I could be as optimistic, but it just, I guess Mariano played better. The linebackers were a little bit more consistent, but on the day, you still only forced one punt. The only stops you really got in the red zone, or I guess that's a silver lining here, would be Purdue goes 4 of 7 in the red zone, would be Purdue just imploded on themselves.
Yeah.
Where that there was a botched snap that Ben Thomas Rush gets a tackle for loss, or there's a missed field goal. Then you have the guy before half, that poor field goal kicker. The only thing I could think about in terms of describing the low trajectory of that kick is in golf, if you were to skull it, I don't know if that's the correct term.
That's it. That's right. Yeah.
I mean, that's what it looked like. And Mike Adu Treadway gets credit, and so does the Gopher Special Teams and Rob Wenger. But if Mike Adu Treadway doesn't put his hand up, that's going to hit him directly in the face mask. So I think it's more self-defense than anything. But I think there's still a long way to go. And I look to the next 2 weeks here against Wisconsin and Northwestern, and Minnesota's run defense still has a ways to go. And Derek, what did you see in terms of from that run defense? Because statistically, Purdue was the team coming into the game that was averaging 63 yards a game on the ground, 2.5 yards per carry. They leave Minneapolis on Friday night running for 125 yards and 5 yards a carry. So they essentially double their output of what they were normally doing. And if you want to throw in Luke's pop passes as well, which were glorified jet sweeps, that number gets even bigger. I still think, especially down the defensive linemen and some of the linebackers and safeties still taking some interesting angles. But what did you see from the run defense overall?
Yeah, still a long way to go in run defense. A couple things I noticed. The first is the Gophers used a safety for most of the game to kind of spy Rondale Moore. So where he went, the safety went. And again, Purdue used that to their advantage. So if they're running more on a fake jet pass or a fake jet sweep, that's going to take the safety out of the play. And they run away from that, you're now minus one potential defender. So that hurt them at times. But even with that being said, some of the fundamental things that we've talked about in the past few weeks are still existent, is still a problem. The Gophers are doing a better job at times of setting the edge, but they really broke down this game on some of those outside runs to Moore, where they had the chance, they didn't account for his speed. And, you know, he's going to do that to a lot of teams, to be fair, but it is what it is. You still have to bracket him outside. And, you know, later in the game, I think in the fourth quarter, they had a couple that they finally turn him inside, and he had nowhere to go. He was tackled by pursuit, but they were really difficult time tackling him in space. And then, you know, between the tackles, as I mentioned, some of the things, you know, even when they're setting the edge, you need to have the pursuit back, and you need to be in your gap defending from the backside when those running plays get funneled back. And it was just, you know, to use PJ Fleck term, it was just wildly inconsistent. You know, you saw it at times, it was there, not very often. More often than not, there was at least one undefended gap in the run game. And then the ball carrier is pretty much untouched into the secondary or beyond the secondary into an explosive gain.
So I looking at this team, I think offensively from a weapon standpoint, other than, you know, running back for, at a receiver standpoint, I don't know if you're going to play a better team in terms of receivers. You know, Rondale Moore obviously is kind of the headliner, but let's be honest, David Bell is as good, if not maybe even a higher ceiling, in my opinion. He is incredibly talented. I mean, just the ability to make that strip on Coney Durr on that should have been interception. Like, yeah. I've seen him do that against, like, I watched him against Northwestern. He is unbelievable. Like, I think he has an incredibly bright future. He may end up being a better pro. Maybe I'm crazy, but he is. They are really good, and they use that to their advantage. I was really, really impressed. What are your thoughts, Ryan, on just the dynamic or how dynamic their offense can be?
I think David Bell and Rondale Moore, when they're healthy, are the best wide receiver duo in the Big Ten. And then I don't think that should be a hot take if it is, because you saw David Bell make that very, very much a contested catch in the end zone for a touchdown. Coney Durr did about everything right, and David Bell still found a way to secure it, get feet down, and then turn away so the ball remains intact. Rondale Moore is so elusive and so good in space, and you saw him give the Gophers issues at times, and I think they're really, really good. But to Derek's point, you know, I think Coney Durr had moments, but they weren't consistent enough.
Yeah.
Maybe the guy who is played is the biggest or the most pleasant surprise for me through five games is Justice Harris.
Yeah,
because
that's fair.
He had not played well in his first 3 years, and he was a gigantic question mark. And he had the game, certainly his best game in pass coverage, where I think a play that maybe isn't going to get as much attention, but should, is that final play before halftime, where Justice Harris is able to, I believe, get his right arm in there to dislodge the ball just enough that Rondale Moore cannot secure it, and that touchdown is called back because of it. And so 6 points are taken off the board. Purdue lines up to kick a field goal, and the kicker kicks it right into the head of Mike Adu Treadway, and there's no points. I mean, how big would those 6 or 3 points have been at the end of the game there?
For sure.
If Justice Harris doesn't make that play. But it's they're very, very talented. You can see why. I mean, it was absurd the number of times. Rondale Moore had 19 targets. That's an ungodly amount. David Bell had 10. Between the two of them, they combined for 23 catches for 220 yards and two touchdowns. But there's still a long way to go. And I don't have a ton of confidence that Minnesota is going to be able to generate a pass rush this weekend against Wisconsin if they couldn't do it against Purdue. But we'll kind of have to see how it plays out.
All right, I got one last thing I want to touch on defense before we move on. one of the players I've been most impressed with, I agree with you on Justice Harris. I think he has been drastically improved. I think we also have to give some credit to Phillip Howard. He arguably is probably their best tackler in space. Derek and I texted a little bit about this during or around the game. And Derek, you astutely pointed out that he might have some of the best defensive instincts on the team, which the irony is not lost on either of us that he is now only his second season playing defense. But he has been a pleasant surprise. And then also would like to get your thoughts, Derek, on Calvin Swenson. He seemed to, obviously, maybe what he lacks a little bit in athleticism, he maybe makes up for smarts, and at least it seems to be a fairly sure-handed tackler.
Yeah, I think that's something we've touched on, you know, earlier in the Gopher struggles, is some of these guys, particularly the inexperienced guys, they haven't yet developed that play recognition and instinct that you need, you know, when you need to play fast. And again, a team like Purdue, that's going to run the amount of, you know, different route trees and combinations and styles of passes they run is pretty broad. So it's not, you know, when you play a little more, I'll just call it vanilla offense, you know, Iowa, Wisconsin. I mean, after the first 2-3 series, you've kind of seen what they're going to run. Purdue, it's not that way. So your the ability to recognize and diagnose plays, you know, post snap, as you know, is what's going to help you play fast. And that's where you and I talked about it, Luke, that, you know, one of the guys that's been on the offensive side of the ball somehow, some way, maybe that's helped him, is a guy that seems to play with good instincts, good recognition. Justice Harris is another one of those guys that Ryan, you just mentioned, that, that seems to be coming along and is able to recognize that. And so, yeah, it's something that, that, you know, with 11 guys, if you have two or three that just aren't there, that can hurt you. That's going to create the inconsistency. But yeah, Kelvin Swenson, they used him again in some of that bracket coverage with Rondale Moore. And he had a pretty, I think they simplified the game plan for him, which again allowed him to play fast. And, you know, I'll just say it one more time. I thought in addition to the wide receivers for Purdue, we were pretty talented. I thought the quarterback up until, you know, late in the fourth quarter made really good decisions. I was sort of sitting there the whole game as you watch this back and forth and the Minnesota offense is really clicking. And I just kept thinking to myself, if Purdue makes a mistake, Minnesota could pull away. If they throw an interception or they have a fumble, you know, a turnover and Minnesota is able to score. Now you can take that to, you know, a high 2-score lead and low 3-score lead. And then you might be able to pull away, and it just never happened. And I just, you know, Purdue again was pretty efficient in the passing game. And if it sounds like I'm being overly optimistic, you know, I'm trying to judge these players based on the talent they have and what they're working with right now. And I thought that again, with the game plan that they put together on Saturday, I thought in the passing game, they held their own for most of the game.
And that's where Kelvin Swenson's playing, because Jordan Howden gets knocked out in the third quarter. I remember seeing that play live. Here's what I saw. I saw Howden sprinting off the field, coming to the sidelines, pointing to his eyes or somewhere. And then you saw the trainer sprint down the sidelines to get him something. And all I know is that he then went to the locker room and then returned in sweats. So as Derek said, it appeared to me as well that Rossi simplified things for Kelvin, as he's the next guy in the game. And maybe with a full week of practice, they'll be able to potentially do some different things to try and slow down Wisconsin. Now, I do think before we move to offense, Luke, we should touch on those two pass interference calls. The two gigantic ones in late in the fourth quarter there. Third and I think it was 9 at the 14. Thomas Rush actually gets a pass rush, flushes out the quarterback, and then they throw a pass interference on Tyler Newbin. Now, from my point of view, from watching it back, that call is more egregious than the Purdue offensive pass interference call.
I think the real question is, does Newbin even touch him?
I think he gets I think it was a left hand on him, maybe.
But like he doesn't. But I couldn't.
No.
The angle wasn't good enough. I can't see like he pulls jersey. I can't see that he even like impedes his ability to move. Like that's where I thought that was a terrible call, no question. But like I really don't think he impeded him at all. So I don't understand that call at all.
Derek, thoughts?
Well, when I saw it live, you flag in the secondary, my first thought was going to be holding, because the way that the quarterback basically just threw the ball away.
Agreed.
Would tell me that, okay, perhaps somebody wasn't open because they were being held by a defensive back. So then when it was called pass interference, that was a little bit befuddling because of the way that the pass, you know, was arguably not even catchable. And then I also just thought on the replay, it didn't provide any sort of perspective on, right. You know, I just didn't think they had a good show of any replay, but I agree with Ryan. You know, I guess I'll go full homer on the thing here. I didn't see anything in any of the replays that would show pass interference, whether we just missed it or they didn't have a good perspective or whether it just truly wasn't. I didn't see anything.
So I completely agree with you, Derek. And I actually tried to play it back, you know, when I watched the game, parts of the game again, to try and see, like, did they just get the wrong number and it should have been holding or something else on somebody else, right? Now, with TV, you can't always get great angles, and I couldn't get one. I couldn't even find a holding on somebody, even that they got, like the wrong number of the player. At the end of the day, I'm not sure where that came from. Again, we don't have great camera angles, so there could have been something that we're still totally missing, right? But at the end of the day, I found that quite befuddling. So we should probably transition to the game winner for Purdue, or what would have been the game winner. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I saw two flags. Did you guys see two flags?
I know I saw one from the back judge, definitively.
But I think you had
one. I don't remember if there was a second off the top of my head.
Okay. I thought when I looked it back that the back judge threw one, and then back by right on the goal line, he threw one as well.
He could have. And that, I mean, if you watch it back from the angle of certainly the back judge, who I believe is standing right underneath the goalpost, he has a perfect angle, and I'm watching the play right now, of the Purdue tight end extending his right arm. He's got the perfect angle to see that. And Howard, it's Howard right in the chest. Howard stands up a little bit, and then he catches it.
So,
I mean, that's – I think it's definitively a flag to throw there? No. Do I think that because you threw it, it's definitely pass interference? Yes.
So if you're watching it again, I'm all but certain the one right near the pylon, he also throws a flag. Can you see that in the video while you're watching? Because that to me – now, again – do I think that's pass interference? No, I do not. I didn't think it was pass interference. I also don't subscribe to the theory that you just let players play. Like, I hear lots of people say, well, it's the end of the game, you got to let them play. It's like, I don't subscribe to that. If the letter of the law says this, you throw the flag if you believe that they broke the letter of the law. But at the end of the day, I don't agree that that was pass interference. I do think that that should have counted as a touchdown. But I don't know. Derek, your thoughts on that call?
Well, I don't have much to add. I mean, it's one of those plays where if you slow it down and zoom in, you can see probably what the referee saw, and that he does extend his arm. I think he actually hits his face mask, as you can see his helmet dip down, and then he does lose a half a step. But in a full speed game, I don't think that's usually called. I mean, that's my opinion. Is there absolutely nothing there? No, there's something there, but to your point, Luke, does it cross that line of being a penalty? Probably not.
Luke, to your point, the official standing at the pylon also threw a flag.
Yeah, there are two flags on
two different angles.
Yeah, so that's where I don't necessarily get the outcry. If you're getting two unique perspectives calling throwing flags, like, they both seemingly saw the same thing. It just happened to be that TV didn't either grab it well enough. Now, I'm not saying that I agree that it was pass interference.
Well, here's the thing, is the first angle they show on TV is the absolute worst angle to see any of the alleged contact of the contact that was there. Now, and that's why everybody thinks it's so terrible. But then you watch it back from a few different angles and it's like, okay, I get it. Now, that should not be the reason Purdue fans think they lost the game.
No,
you missed the field goal. You had another one skull. You had Rondale Moore drop one. Your defense still gave up 34 points. Now, Minnesota gets an interception on the next play that I thought arguably could have been pass interference on Mariano Sorry-Marin.
Yes.
Impeding on Rondale Moore's route there, but allegedly he got his eyes around, I guess, and then it falls into Josh Ani's lap. But it has certainly been, and I know this is something I think we've talked about more off the podcast than on the podcast, it's been a rare year, or I'll put it this way. Big Ten officials have been in rare form. Now, I feel like we say that every single year, but this year especially just feels like some of the calls that they're making or not making, it's incredibly interesting to me.
So I'll add here, and then I want to get Derek's perspective, because I thought this was a pretty cleanly called, or at least consistently called, game through three quarters. By my memory, there were only three penalties in total. two on Minnesota and one on Purdue through three quarters, and there ended up being eight total penalties. So there were five in that fourth quarter alone. Some of them questionable whether or not they should have been penalties. But yeah, I agree with you from, you know, from the standpoint of the Big Ten officials being in rare form. I thought that the game before against Iowa was probably one of the worst officiated games that I had seen in quite some time. From my perspective, I don't want to, I don't think that, I also don't believe that officials determine outcomes of games. I don't subscribe to that theory. Now, people might disagree with me, but in the larger grand scheme of things, they are a minor portion of your ability to succeed. And I would subscribe to the theory, especially in this. It just didn't matter. It all kind of equals out in the end. Your thoughts, Derek?
Well, I think that now in today's game, there's as little impact on the outcome as there has ever been and maybe can be. Before instant replay, there were definitely games that were the outcome was impacted because, I mean, you could literally miss a guy's foot being in bounds in the back of the end zone, and if the ref didn't see it or the official didn't see it at the time, you couldn't replay that, and then the touchdown was taken off the board, et cetera. So I did, you know, as much as, you know, it's frustrating as a fan or just, you know, to have to watch so many replays, I guess that I'm not taking a stance on how much replay should be used, but I am acknowledging that replay has mitigated a lot of those, you know, really impactful scoring plays and things like that. So I guess all in all, I agree with you, Luke.
Yeah. And to add to that, I think the only thing that I dislike, while I agree that replay fixes a lot of things and gets the right call, I think what it does is it kills the flow of games, right? I think that's annoying.
Definitely.
More than anything, like first play of the game in this game, Cam Wiley fumbled. No, he didn't, but they didn't know. So then they review it. And so, man, I think they just have to be a little bit more definitive on when they need to stop the game and when they don't. I'd like to see, you know, they can make these decisions more on the fly with someone in the booth so we don't kill so much time, because otherwise every time we stop, it's just absolutely horrendous. All right, so I do want to transition here. Ryan, real quick, these officials probably need to take out insurance because they may be getting a fine here. And do you think by chance... Bill Burns would insure these fellows with their side gigs here?
Boy, that was a transition. I'm here for it, though. You know, he might. He'd certainly give him a quote, because the Burns Insurance Agency, you know, they, my father, and we've talked about it for weeks now, and I just talked to him yesterday. He's trying to figure out what to get for Christmas, and then he's trying to figure out with everything and everything now shut down, how does he get his shopping done? Well, he loves to shop so much that the Burns Insurance Agency will shop your insurance rates and coverage for you. He's an independent insurance agent that has access to over 20 different insurance companies to shop for the best coverage at the best price for you. He puts you first, you being the customer, and he loves to make sure that you're happy. So if you want to learn more, go to insurancebyburns.com. That's insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's chat a little bit of offense now. This is my personal opinion. I thought this was one of Tanner Morgan's better games of the year. He ends up going 15 for 22, 262 yards. Doesn't throw a touchdown on the day, but there were, again, a number of drops that probably could have been completions. But I thought he actually played a pretty good game in the pass game. What do you think, Derek?
Yeah, definitely. I thought it was probably his best game of the year. You know, we'd talked about previously, his reads pre and post snap have been pretty solid. I thought we're at maybe at the shakiest point against Iowa, but when you look at the season as a whole, have been pretty solid, but he just wasn't hitting all of his spots. And that was definitely not the case on Friday. He good pre and post snap reads. And then definitely, I think his best game accuracy wise, especially on some of those deep passes, which we'll get into, was a very pleasant surprise to see those, and his accuracy on those is very impressive. So good. I don't want to call it a bounce back game, but I think his sharpest game of the year.
I think it's one he needed for Mike Stanford going forward. And what I mean by that is, I don't think Tanner lost confidence. I really don't. But the way he played here against Purdue, I am hopeful now that Mike Sanford has confidence in him to actually take shots down the field? Because Tanner was really good on his deep ball on Friday night, and you still see the conservative nature of Minnesota's offense. We'll get into the play calling here in a little bit, but it's, I mean, when Morgan had time, I mean, that first throw to Chris Ottman-Bell, I think it was on an inside fade route along the far sidelines. If you want to look in the dictionary at what a drop in the bucket throw is, that would be it. Tight coverage, 40 yards down the field. Ottman-Bell never breaks stride. It's right in the breadbasket, 40-yard gain. Fourth and eighth throw, right on the money. You saw numerous throws. Now, was Tanner perfect? No.
No.
I mean, he missed a few throws, but it was arguably, and I think I'd agree with Luke, probably his best performance of the season against what I thought were physical corners for Purdue. It was interesting to kind of watch what Bob Diaco, Purdue's defensive coordinator, what his game plan was, because from my perspective in the press box, you're able to see the entire field a lot better than you are on TV. And Rashad Bateman had two people over him at all times. There was even a play in the third quarter. I've never seen this before. He had three men on him. There was a corner to his inside. There was a corner to his outside. And then there was a safety over the top. I have no idea what the coverage on that could possibly be. But all I know is Minnesota ran the ball on that play, which they absolutely should have. But Tanner was good. And when you look at the next 2 weeks, and again, I'm getting ahead of myself here for the end of the show, but you really hope, especially if Ibrahim cannot go, that Sanford realizes that instead of running to set up the pass, especially against Wisconsin and Northwestern, you have to pass to set up the run.
Yep.
And that's where Minnesota's skill strengths are, or their strengths as an offense are right now, would be with Tanner Morgan, Chris Ottman-Bell, and Rashad Bateman. But I was a fan of the offense through three quarters, Luke. I certainly was.
Yeah. So let's, before we kind of talk about play calling, Chris Ottman-Bell, pretty great game from him. He did have a drop, at least one that I can remember.
So did Bateman. They had two pretty bad drops.
Yeah, they had two pretty bad drops. But, you know, and that's where, you know, Morgan's stats would have looked a little bit better. You know, we know what we have in Ottman-Bell and in Bateman. I am really starting to get high on Daniel Jackson. I know statistically he maybe hasn't been like lighting it up, but from a route running perspective, so far I think he's slowly maturing in this, you know, this, what I'm going to call red shirt year for him. I'm excited on what he can be. I'll defer to you, Ryan. You're the recruiting guy.
I mean, there's a reason we had him as a four-star, or he was a four-star composite. There's a reason he had a lot of offers that minute came between, I think it was Wisconsin, Minnesota. I think the other one might have been Iowa State or Kansas State. But he is very, very talented. He makes two tightly contested catches, one in the red zone. I believe it was a slant. And then he makes that really good sideline catch, and he's able to get a toe in on the sidelines there. And it's where I turned to Chip Scoggins and I said, it's a good thing he's wearing white shoes against that white sideline, because there's no way you're going to be able to overturn that based on what the call on the field was. But that's where you're starting to see, with more and more time, as these guys who didn't have spring ball, didn't have the traditional normal fall camp, it's tough to, you know, come in guns a-blazing like Rashad Bateman did as a true freshman. But you're starting to see that when Bateman leaves after the season, that Daniel Jackson can potentially be a wide receiver too behind Chris Ottman-Bell next year. You know, it's difficult for a true freshman to kind of make waves as early as he has. But I mean, Derek, you were a Big Ten football player. I mean, when you remember back to your true freshman season and just kind of adjusting to the speed of the game, how difficult is it to just come in as a true freshman and make waves?
Yeah, it's very difficult, mainly from the physicality standpoint. I mean, speed is speed, and a lot of these kids coming out of high school they're certainly more well-developed than in the era I played in, because the competitiveness and of high school football and the level of play has risen, and it just continues to rise. But so speed is speed, but the physical nature of you know, in his case, the defenses that he's playing is something that you have to adjust to. I mean, those, you know, you're going to add 15 to 20 pounds of lean mass on most defensive players in the first you know, year or so of strength training. And so you're facing those guys that are, you know, as quick, if not definitely quicker than what you've played in high school, but they're stronger and they're bigger. So, yeah, it's a credit to any of these guys as freshmen to be able to come in and click, that fast.
Okay. So Derek, I want to kind of transition and talk a little bit of play calling here. And I'm going to use an example to kind of transition into this. You know, we've seen the Gophers be pretty adamant about running the ball, right? And when we saw that, there's 41 rushing attempts for 130 yards on the night, only 22 passing attempts for the Gophers on the night. But a play, you know, we often see the Gophers, you know, drag a tight end across, you know, and then at one point they drag Jake Paulson across and then throw a little dump pass to him. He gets 20 yards. How come we just don't see more of that play action, you know, as we see that formation and that motion so frequently when they got such a big gain out of that? Why don't we see that more often?
I wish I had a good answer for you. As frustrating as the play calling the game plan was against Iowa, I was personally, I was as encouraged by the play calling and the game plan in the first three quarters against Purdue. There were, you know, several things that they showed and did that just gives you hope. And it's hard not to look at that and be frustrated by seeing those things and wondering why you haven't seen them earlier. And then, you know, as we'll kind of parlay into here, whether or not they're going to use some of these things against Wisconsin and Northwestern. But just real quickly, you know, they went back to, Ryan mentioned it, Rashad Bateman was doubled, if not every single play, most plays. So, you know, lining him up in the slot, they went back to using him on some clearing routes. So he goes vertical, takes a safety with him, and they run a slant behind it. I mean, that's a 2019 bread and butter Kirk Shiraka, Matt Simon route concept. And so they brought that back, particularly early in the game. That was good to see. The second thing was the introduction of the shallow crossing routes, something they haven't run the entire year. I'm just, and again, I'll try not to get too negative on this, but I don't know why that wasn't there against Iowa. They needed to have something like that in the worst way. And you know what? They ran it against both zone and man coverage. So in zone coverage, you know, against Purdue, they ran two or three guys on crossing routes. When those interior defenders, those linebackers drop into their zones, they still ran a shallow cross underneath that and were able to hit that with a nice catch and run play. And then when Purdue was in man-to-man, they used them as rub routes. So they ran and, you know, carried their defender and tried to rub off on each other and get somebody open. So something that, again, you know, watching that Iowa game, I just don't know why that wasn't in the playbook. Maybe it was just not something that was developed and they put in, but it was really nice to see against Purdue. And then lastly, we've been calling for, I don't know how long, Ryan, that with double coverage somewhere on the field, you have man-to-man coverage down the field. You can throw in the single coverage. And finally, they did that, and with great success. They isolated. I mean, they somehow, some way got Bateman in man coverage down the field, which is rare. But and the other times, you know, it was Chris Ottman-Bell, where if they're doubling Bateman or if they're, you know, playing something tight, someone else on the field is going to be in single coverage. So the opportunity to throw downfield against, in this case, man press coverage was there the whole night when Purdue chose to run that scheme. And so it was really nice to see that. And I'll just say, I hope they don't regress. I hope they keep that in the mix.
Yeah, we'll get into that at the end here, especially when we look ahead to Wisconsin and Northwestern. But Derek hit it on the nail. Where were the crossing routes last week? Where were the inside fades? And by inside fade, I just mean the inside receiver. Now, it could have been, you know, if Minnesota went trips, could have been the middle. I think that was on the fourth and eighth play to Ottman-Bell. But where were all of these things a week ago? What did they just magically appear into the playbook here? I mean, you saw the shallow crossers work on the Rashad Bateman, I think it was 25-yard catch, where the rub route works out perfectly, and Bateman's wide open across the middle. Minnesota goes back to that in the fourth quarter, doesn't have success with it, as I believe. Now, Derek, you can correct me. if I'm wrong here, I would assume that Minnesota thought two things on that third down play, their only passing play of the fourth quarter. They probably assumed that the corner was going to be in press man, and Seth Green's got to do a much better job of getting vertical onto that crossing cornerback, because Rashad's coming from right to left. The corner in that instance is playing 5 yards off. He doesn't run into the linebacker who's he would have potentially if he was in man press. Seth Green doesn't get vertical enough, and then the receiver, or excuse me, the corner makes a good open field tackle. But it's, you know, there's things that you just scratch your head about, because this offense is good when they want to be good, when they want to be aggressive. And that's just something we haven't seen enough of. And that kind of transitions me here into the fourth quarter again, where Minnesota should be in all reality 3-2 right now. They blew a three-score fourth quarter lead against Maryland, and their offense didn't do anything to help them there. And you look at what Minnesota's offense does here in the fourth quarter. I mean, you take out that first play of the fourth quarter where Ibrahim just buries it into the end zone. Minnesota is having a significant amount of issues salting games away. And that's where I don't understand why. And I say that because of this. PJ Fleck has talked about for weeks at his press conferences about the quote-unquote fingerprint of his football team, and how the fingerprint of the 2019 team is different from the 2020 team, which is going to be different from the 2021 team. Well, if he says that, why does he continue to go back to the running game in the fourth quarter when it's not working? It's not. And yet Minnesota, in those two games I've referenced, the Purdue game on Friday night and then the Maryland game from a few weeks ago, I believe the statistic is they ran the ball 19 times and they passed it for 3, yet no first downs. There's only 6 points because Mo Ibrahim gets it in the end zone and then Brock Walker misses the extra point. We'll get to special teams later. But I can't understand for the life of me why for the second game of the last two or three now, that Minnesota just continues to – they're doing what I mean, we've talked about this last week. You're playing to not lose and not playing to win.
May I give you what I believe plays into this somewhat? And I do
– Jim Tressel Bowl?
I didn't think of it that way, but that is a good point. So PJ Fleck has an identity. He has a concept of what he believes culture should be. He has a concept of what he believes, the identity of his football team should be. And I thought when he first came in that he would do a better job of trying to fit players to a scheme, right? Or fit his scheme to his players. And I think in this instance, I think to your point, Ryan, he wants to play Jim Tressel ball. He wants to get a lead and he wants to salt it away. And the reality of the situation is I don't think that they quite have that identity. They don't have that pair and a spare, right? They don't have, three backs that they can throw and wear you out. They really only have Ibrahim. And frankly, he's either worn down or he's banged up now, right? And they're also basically, they don't have the offensive line play to just absolutely maul people, even when they're playing a plus one box. The only exception to that was Illinois, and Illinois is not particularly very good. I think that if this is rooted in PJ Fleck right now, and I think at a certain point you got to be like Pat Fitzgerald and you got to go, here's what we are. And we're going to weigh the risk and the reward. And we're just going to take what's the least amount of risk to us and how we can win this ball game. And you look at like Pat Fitzgerald and what they're doing. They can't run the ball at all. Not at all. So what do? They right. throw the absolute crap out of the ball and they're successful, and they don't care at what point in the game it is. Like, they threw it to win the game against Wisconsin, and it was a 14-7 game. Like, at a certain point, you got to understand who we are, take what the defense gives you, and not be hell-bent on this idea of this is what we do and this is our philosophy regardless of situation.
There's one person I know that is nodding vigorously right now, and that is Justin Guard, because he made that point with me this morning on Gopher Football Sunday. Is
I should get into
that's how
business.
You Yeah, and that's how you – I mean, that's how you play to win the game. And I feel like Fleck, he talks about after the game, trying to put the trust in my players, showing them that, you know, this is, you know, how we win the game. This is not how Minnesota wins the game in 2020. That's my point. The fingerprint of this 2020 team is, if you can't salt away the game against Maryland and Purdue, how in the world are you going to do that against Wisconsin and Northwestern the next 2 weeks if it's competitive? I don't understand. And again, there are reasons for that. Falele and Dunlap aren't here now. Mo Ibrahim's banged up. But that's my point for this game in the fourth quarter. Ibrahim gets banged up on the first carry after the touchdown drive. He comes out holding his right wrist. Now, from what I've heard, his wrist was banged up a little bit against Iowa. He potentially didn't practice much over the week. And he re-injured it on that play, and then he doesn't return. So we're throwing out there Bryce Williams and Cam Wiley and expecting them to be able to find the holes here when Purdue is their ears pinned back to come down and stop the run. Why can't we see on, say, like second and eight? You know Purdue's got eight in the box, which means they're probably playing single high and there's man coverage on the outside. Take a play-action deep shot. Why not? What's the worst thing that can happen? It can't be anything worse. I mean, right. Yeah, the clock stops. Great. But at least you can advance the ball and potentially salt away the game. Derek, fourth quarter offense is the way that they're currently being called. Give me a significant amount of stress. What have been your thoughts, especially when you look back on this Purdue game? Minnesota's offense plays so well through three quarters, but then the fourth quarter hits again, and they are just an abomination.
Yeah, I think a couple things. I don't necessarily fault the coaching staff for testing that, because there are games when if you're dominant enough up front, even if the opponents are going plus one in the box, it's just if things are clicking, you can continue to run the ball. So, and I know that's what they want to do. So I don't fault them for trying it. But I guess my main criticism is they're just going to this way too early. If you know, watching the game back, they started going into, you know, this turtle mode with over 8 minutes left in the game. You know, look, if you can put together an eight minute drive in the fourth quarter doing nothing, but I mean, they've done it in the past, 2018 Wisconsin and some other games, but it just wasn't happening. To your point, Ryan, in that fourth quarter, Purdue was going single high, sometimes cover zero, press all over the field, man press. So these are the same looks they were getting that Minnesota threw the ball down the field with success. So into that single man coverage, Chris Montman-Bell, Rashad Bateman, you know, those, you know, I don't even want to call them 50-50 balls, but those great passes that Morgan had where he dropped him in there. So that look was there. And I know that that's not ideal. That's not what you want to do, but that's what the defense is giving you. And you know, exactly. To their credit, I mean, that's conventional wisdom. They're going to take away what they know you want to do in that situation. And so, you know, if it gets down to, I don't know if there's a magic number, but 2, 3, 4 minutes left in the game, then you can play, you know, in 2020, the way the team score now, you got to, in my opinion, you just got to wait until you get closer. 8, 9 minutes left in the game is way too early to be running three, you know, run on first, second, third down, you know, in the fourth quarter.
I do want to get to one point here quick, just on the whole play calling aspect. The two most perplexing, mystifying, insert your big adjective here would be third quarter, when we talked about this in the pre-production meeting, gentlemen, third and seven from, I think, the Iowa 35. Preston Jelen, no offense to Preston Jelen, a walk-on from Prior Lake. He's been a good special teams player for Minnesota. It's third and seven. Preston Jelen comes onto the field. And Mike Sanford checks out of his original play and into outside zone on third and seven from plus territory. It goes nowhere. Axel Rushmeyer gets beat. It's a tackle for loss. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, has Mike Sanford learned nothing? And then on the very next play, Minnesota goes with an inside fade to Chris Ottman-Bell that puts them inside the five. Can someone please explain to me how you go from one end of the spectrum of being incredibly, incredibly conservative to saying, yeah, fourth and eight, four down territory. Yeah, I suppose we should dial up the inside fade route to Ottman-Bell. Why aren't we not doing that on third down? And instead, you have to establish the outside zone running game to Preston Jelen. Anybody?
I'll defer to Derek for now. I have my theory that I'll give it regardless.
Well, I'm probably going to steal your thunder, Luke, but if they know it's four down territory, you're probably back to the same scenario we were frustrated with against Iowa, which is we're going to try and run it on third down, knowing that we're going to go for it on fourth down as well. But just to add a little bit to the mystery, Ryan, the defense gave the same look on both snaps. So they were in that single high press man across the field. And so I don't know, there really wasn't anything that they saw on the outside zone that they didn't see on the fourth down play or vice versa.
Yeah. I think the other thing too, is if your mindset is, we know we're going to play for four downs here. Like your thought is, we're either going to bust this and we're going to get a first down. Otherwise, if we can get plus yardage, right, we now can have more options of what we can call if it's, you know, third and three versus, you know, I think it ended up being like third and or fourth and seven, right? You can open up the playbook a little bit more. So it is a risk reward thing. It shouldn't surprise you that PJ Fleck is going to, for the most part, take the less risky call almost at every juncture. At least that's my perspective. He is fairly risk averse, which is ironic because what drove me nuts about the whole Jerry Kill phase was they were even more risk averse because they only threw the ball to the outside. At least Fleck, at least they'll throw slants and stuff across the middle. But yeah, for the most part, I think this is just a risk aversion and knowing and being comfortable with what options you might have in fourth down.
I just find it so frustrating because I don't understand it. It's the lack of rhythm, the lack of consistency, and you have an offense flowing so well, and then you just decide to go into your shell. And it's very frustrating. It almost cost Minnesota their second straight game, or not second straight game, their second game in five total now, because the offense just. Everything that worked so well through the first 45 minutes apparently just doesn't work because Minnesota doesn't want to go to it in those final 15 minutes. And that's what I couldn't spell it out anymore on the preview. When we previewed this game, what did I say? I said, be aggressive for 60 minutes and keep your foot on the gas pedal. Mm-hmm. Well, they get to the home stretch and they say, whoa, in the middle of a horse race. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And you can't expect to play that way against Iowa and Northwestern and somehow come away with a victory.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Let's transition here and talk quickly about special teams and previewing next. But before we do that, a quick message from the Goal Line Club. They will have more live events this year, guys. Make sure that you check out their website for that. Also, follow them on social media. They do have a Twitter account. I believe they have a Facebook page as well. And if you're a member, you are on a distribution list that will get you emails. But sign up for those virtual live events. They've been really, really fun. I think maybe, Ryan, they twisted your arm in even to possibly doing one. Is that correct?
That is correct. We'll see how it all works out here in the coming weeks. But you might be able to see my face for radio.
I'm
hosting.
I'm really curious. Do you do a lot of video calls these days?
We do Zoom press conferences and stuff. I've done some Zoom things.
I'm just curious if you're going to feel comfortable on something live on video. Like, for the most part, everything you do video-wise is kind of like tape delayed. Are you thinking you're going to be able to do this?
I don't know. As the people saw at the live event last year, I get very nervous. You know, I'm such an introvert, but I think I could persevere.
The irony of the job you have and being an introvert is never lost on me. But if you guys are interested in any of these live events or supporting Gopher football, go to thegoallineclub.org. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about special teams.
They didn't beat themselves,
I guess.
I mean, sort of. I guess.
I mean,
they technically get credit for the field goal block, but as we talked about, if you go back and watch that, I am 80% sure that ball hits Micah Dutredway right in the face mask if he doesn't get his hand up.
Yeah. Well, it's going to hit an offensive lineman.
It's going to hit someone.
Yeah.
It's another case of. know what, Derek, you give your thoughts before I get into mine.
Well, how about this? For the second time this season, I'll mention that I think the kickoff coverage was pretty good. Yeah. They actually were to the point where Purdue was fair catching in the second half on the kickoffs, because they've got some guys. I try to remember the names. Jalen Glaze, I believe, is one of them. And
yeah,
I want to give some of those guys credit, because yeah, they're playing. Those guys are playing fast, and they're breaking down, and it's nice to see on the kickoff coverage. You can cover the rest of it, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, Derek LeCaptain, a walk-on from Wisconsin, number 35, made a couple of nice plays. At least there was that, because you have Cam Wiley.
The kicker helps too, right? Like, I know he kicked one out of bounds.
Dragan Kesic is actually helping the football team.
Yes.
I know people think I'm incapable of giving them any compliments, but you've heard me give them multiple compliments on this episode. Now, Cam Wiley should have taken the opening kickoff for a touchdown.
Yep.
If he keeps his feet up, it's one-on-one with the kicker in space. Instead, he's tripped up. He fumbles it, and then he doesn't fumble it because it's ruled that he's down. The next one, he returns to the Minnesota 13, but then special teams, and it's taken back to their own 7. It's 18 yards of field position compared to fair catching. Now, Dragan did kick one out of bounds, giving Purdue 10 10 yards of field position. And then Brock Walker misses an extra point, where that proved to be massive at the end of the game there, where Purdue knew they only needed to get a field goal instead of a touchdown. Now, Purdue was playing to win the game. I mean, you saw that with the tight end route there into the end zone, but it needs to improve. Now, I don't know if I've mentioned this here or not, but I posted it on Gopher Illustrated this afternoon that Minnesota starting kicker Michael Lance is out for the year, per a source. Sounds like he's having back surgery. Since he arrived on campus, he's had some back issues, and it got so bad that they're going to have to shut him down for the year, and he's going to have to get back surgery. So we wish him a healthy recovery here. But it's very disconcerting for me that we have multiple specialists that have to get surgeries. And because you have Michael Lance now with his back, you have Brock Walker coming off hernia, you have Grant Rierse with hip surgery. Why are the specialists getting so injured with such major injuries? And, if the specialists can't stay healthy and everything else continues to be what they have been for Rob Wenger, I don't know what else to say. But that's me being positive and negative on special teams.
Okay. Now, as we close out special teams, I just want to go back to, they played a ton of guys on defense. I'm curious if there are any guys that kind of stuck out to you that, you know, maybe haven't normally gotten reps that stuck out and maybe put some good film on and made a case for more playing time. I'll give both of you guys an option or an opportunity, I should say, to weigh in there. Anybody stick out for you, Ryan?
Well, the guys that got more playing time than they normally would be Logan Richter, the young man from Purim, who's a gigantic nose tackle body. He got a few reps. D.V. Harris and Jalen Logan Redding, two freshmen, got reps. I didn't think that they particularly played well, but they played. You also saw Noah Hickox, number 91, get a lot more reps than he normally would with Rashad Chaney and Keontae Shotout. I thought he played well. Josh Ani was the winner of what linebacker is going to play the most reps next to Mariano Soria-Marin. 2 weeks ago, it was Cody Lindenberg. Last week, it was James Gordon. This week, it was Josh Ani. And then you also saw Calvin Swenson and Philip Howard continue to get reps. But you saw some of those young defensive linemen. I thought Richter played the best of them. But, Derek, what did you think?
I just think as a whole, I noticed the same guys you did. I saw Noah Hickox make an impact a couple times. But it seemed, I guess, in general, I thought it energized things a little bit that they rotated more guys in.
Yes.
Just as a general statement. I know, again, I don't want to harp on it, but there's still a long way to go with run defense, and there's things they need to do better. But I thought that, I don't know if it was just I thought it kept the aggressiveness up, having rotated more of those guys in.
All right. So maybe as we close out, let's just talk quickly about the upcoming games. You're playing two of arguably the best teams, obviously, in the Big Ten West and maybe in the Big Ten in general. This is Wisconsin and Northwestern. Northwestern knocks off Wisconsin to take the outright lead in the Big Ten West here. You know, there's no such thing as games apart this year because, frankly, Wisconsin's played three games to, I think now, has Northwestern played six? Yes, I think they've played five or six. But regardless, you know, there's no such thing as like game lead because it's going to come down to winning percentage, I believe. So Wisconsin or Northwestern takes the lead there, and we get them in back-to-back games now. I guess what are we going to have to see, Derek, from this Gopher team if they're going to basically make a run for 500 in the Big Ten?
Well, I think to be realistic, we talked about it last week that I think Purdue was a good matchup for the Gophers. Just the Gopher strengths matched up well. And I just don't think that's going to be the case the next 2 weeks. It's going to be an uphill climb. And so, you know, realistically, they're going to need to play well in all phases. And they're probably going to need to win the turnover battle in particular. I'm going to need a little bit of help in the turnover game. So just to go one level deeper, you know, the Gophers, I believe, are going to try and have to do whatever they can to slow down Wisconsin's running game. And whether they can or not, or to what degree, is yet to be seen. It's no surprise here that the Gophers have struggled big time to slow down the run, and Wisconsin's particularly good running the ball. I think that the bigger question mark that we've kind of alluded to all episode here, that we've kind of built up to, is how do the Gophers approach things on offense? I do think that the Gophers have enough talent, and if they're aggressive enough and dynamic enough with the game plan and the play calling, that I do think they can score in each of the next 2 weeks. If they choose to try and play ball control and play less aggressive and try and beat these game management teams at their own game, I don't think they're going to win. I don't think they have a chance to win. I think they're going to need to take more risk and be more dynamic on offense to give them a chance.
It's essentially going to come down to how smart or how aggressive do you think Mike Sanford and PJ Fleck are going to be offensively? If you think that they're going to approach this the way that Northwestern did against Wisconsin, where they tried to air it out, because I really don't think Minnesota is going to be able to run the ball. That's with or without Mo Ibrahim. I think that Wisconsin's front seven is among the best in the country. I think they're a tier above what Iowa is. They're the number one run defense in the Big Ten by a large margin. So are we going to see Minnesota just run it and run it and run it 35 times a game? Because if we are, Minnesota's going to lose 45-10 on Saturday. Now, if Minnesota comes out, as I mentioned earlier, if they pass to set up the run, where your biggest strengths right now, I understand that pass blocking isn't one of Minnesota's biggest strengths. Derek has touched on that many times. You can somewhat mitigate that by keeping in a tight end or keeping in a running back and having your skill positions of Rashad Bateman and Chris Ottman-Bell and Daniel Jackson go out there and try to win, because that's where Minnesota is going to have a chance. So unless special teams just rises up from the depths and just sticks it to me, there's nothing more I would love to see that for the record here, but you have to pass the ball because you're not going to be able to run it. And especially if Mo Ibrahim is out. Now, we're not going to know his status until Saturday. That's the reality. You can be mad at the media about that. You cannot. We're going to ask him, PJ Fleck, on Monday, what's Mo Ibrahim's status? We asked him after the game. He gave us nothing. We'll ask him on Monday. He's not going to give us anything. And if he cannot go, and it's a combination of Cam Wiley, Bryce Williams, and hopefully Trey Potts is back, of which, by the way, folks, I don't have an answer for why. What's going on with Trey Potts? He's warmed up the last 2 weeks, but they announced him as out. And I thought he's looked pretty good out there doing it. So I hope Trey Potts is back. If Trey Potts is back, to me, absolutely without question, he is your future back. Now, I hope that the future back is getting him in space 5-10 times and not trying to run it up the middle against a very, 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 very good Jim Leonard Wisconsin Badger defense. But I mean, if the offense does run to set up the pass, guys, I mean, this is, like I said, I just don't know. I mean, this game is going to get out of hand quickly, because do any of the three of us believe that this Gopher run defense is going to be able to stop Wisconsin's running offense? Does anyone here think there's a chance?
I think the only way the Gophers stop the run defense is if this game isn't played. Because I think that's a realistic possibility.
It is, with the COVID numbers as they currently are. I think Minnesota's a few off from potentially getting there. But I would also note, if I'm Joe Rossi in this game, I have to sell out to stop the run, especially because Graham Mertz is coming off a career worst game. Wisconsin's top two receivers were out last week.
Let me just turn that into a different question. Northwestern is arguably the best defense in all the Big Ten, right? So I'm going to turn this to Derek. And what Northwestern is able to do is make Graham Mertz look like a freshman with coverage. That's what I saw. Do you believe, Derek, that the Gophers are capable of that? I don't.
Well, the Northwestern was able to slow down Wisconsin's running game enough to put him in position to make difficult throws. So there's a prerequisite there that we just don't know. Given what we've seen so far, we don't have a lot of faith that that's they're going to be afforded the same luxury on Saturday. But I would answer Ryan's, I guess, question or his speculation about are they going to throw to open up the running game. Knowing the Gopher offensive coaching staff the way that we do, I think they're going to try. I think they're at least going to start trying to run the ball. I don't think they're going to start with a game plan of trying to. But the question is, if they're not able to establish that, and we just don't know yet, because Minnesota is good at running the ball, but we saw they'd struggled against a front like Iowa. And as you just said, we feel like Wisconsin is even a step above. So the question in my mind is going to be not so much are they going to start out that way, it's how stubborn are they going to be. If Wisconsin really commits to stopping Minnesota's run, how long is Minnesota going to hold out, or how willing are they going to be to change? I'll just leave you with this. If we think back to last year's game, which seems like 10 years ago, Minnesota set out and their entire defensive game plan was to stop Jonathan Taylor in Wisconsin's running game, and they did. But the all the credit goes to Wisconsin, as much as it pains me to say this, you know, them being a rival, et cetera. All the credit goes to Wisconsin's coaching staff, because they took their run first game plan, they put it on the shelf, and they came out with a totally different, they were ready for it. And they came out with a totally different scheme, and they threw the ball, and they threw screens, they threw Jonathan Taylor downfield. So they reacted in a way that helped them win the game. The question might be on Saturday, is Minnesota going to do the same thing or do something similar? If Wisconsin sets out to stop Minnesota's run, what does Minnesota do?
So let me ask one question. Like I agree that they're probably going to come out and try to establish a run. Kirk Sharaka, he was here longer, and I wasn't trying to play catch up as fast because I don't get to start these games on time. So I'm always trying to catch up so that I can follow Ryan Burns on Twitter because I just love his feed. It's just incredible.
Ha ha.
But I'll say this. Does Sanford script like Sharaka did? Because he scripted the heck out of early games, Sharaka did. Do you guys know? Have you noticed?
I mean, every coaching staff scripts.
Well, to a certain extent, yes. But I like Sharaka was very obvious. They were trying to get just from formation.
Oh, it also helps. I mean, you look at the Iowa game, it doesn't help that Minnesota's two first offensive drives start from inside their own 10 because
fair.
Special teams inadequacies.
Yeah.
And that's where then you have to run it out and then get into your script. And if you don't run it out, then you punt it back. And that's where, to Derek's point, now 2 years ago in this game, Minnesota ran the crap out of the ball at Camp Randall. And they eat up Wisconsin.
That was a depleted Wisconsin defense to a certain extent. No excuses, right? They don't get any excuses for that, but that's part of why they were successful.
It was a part of it. I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, play devil's advocate here. It be done? Certainly. Do I expect it to be done? Absolutely not. So to Derek's point, when Minnesota doesn't find success at the end of the first quarter and it's 10-0 Wisconsin potentially, are they going to continue to just say, well, this is our identity, we're going to establish the run?
Isn't Wisconsin though down at like two DBs? Like, aren't they hurting?
Potentially.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, because
in theory, this could set up okay for Minnesota, but the issue is why we're even having this conversation does anyone trust Mike Sanford and PJ Fleck at this point to see that and to come out and just try to do something different? What's the worst thing that happens? Tanner throws a couple of picks and, you know, Wisconsin gets up. Well, okay. Well, at least you tried.
I
just want to see Minnesota try to do something different, because running the ball against them isn't going to be very, very successful, yeah, in my opinion.
I want to see them do something different too. I completely agree. But I think the real question for both of you is, do you think this defense can actually put them in a position where they don't have to score 40 points and against Wisconsin? And the fact that Wisconsin's only played three games and has less wear and tear, to me, says even if they had played an equivalent number of games, I just don't see how Minnesota's defense can stop them. Because I still think this is probably one of, if not the worst defenses in the Big Ten.
It's one of the worst defenses in the country.
Well,
Power five-wise.
Well, we don't play anybody else in the country, so I just keep it to the Big Ten.
It is arguably, I mean, Nebraska would like something to say about it after their performance against Illinois this past weekend.
The irony of them wearing their black jerseys.
It was rich. It was rich to see Illinois come in there and that black shirt defense look the way it did.
But either of you, Derek, did you see the tweet that Illinois football put out?
Yeah. Yep, I did. And then I think they deleted it later.
Luke, do you remember what it was for those of us?
I saw it,
but do you want to repeat for the listeners who did not see it?
They effectively thanked Nebraska for bringing football back after they absolutely curb stomped them.
It was, they were like, thanks for the game. It was like, thanks for the game, Nebraska. And thanks for bringing back Big Ten football. Because that's all Nebraska fans and Scott Frost think. They're the sole reasons why Big Ten football is back. But last point I want to make here, and then we can let everybody get out of their cars or get done working out or whatever they do with this podcast at this point. I would say shovel, but I'm looking at green grass on November the 22nd, so I'm not entirely sure what that's about. But if, to Luke's last point there, I have no faith that Minnesota is not going to give up 30-plus points. And if that's going to happen and Minnesota's going to win the game with the expectation that you're going to have to score 30 points to win, of which Minnesota's allowed 30 plus points in four of their five games this year, the offensive game plan has to be aggressive to match that. And I just don't know if it's going to be. Now, I will ask PJ Fleck about that and Mike Sanford about that this week, and you can read their answers on Gopher Illustrated, but I just want to see Minnesota come out and do something a little different if the run game doesn't get going like we expect.
Okay. Well, Derek, any parting thoughts before we shut this thing down and give everybody their lives back?
No, I would just say, despite, you know, whatever the line comes out as, I mean, Minnesota's going to be big underdogs. I'm still excited.
We actually have the line. I can tell you that. It opened, now I lost it. It's minus 22. Yeah, 22.
It's already been bet up. Well, so the Gophers are minus 22, or excuse me, imagine Minnesota minus 22 against Wisconsin. They're 22-point road dogs right now.
And the over-under opened at 51.5.
Okay. So despite being heavy underdogs, my point was going to be that it is a rivalry game. I know that, you know, the Gophers were able to win in 2018, but there's a lot of guys on the team that want to beat Wisconsin, that are tired of losing to Wisconsin, that are tired of hearing about it. So I know that emotions will be high, and I'm excited to watch the game and to at least have the opportunity to have these guys compete, you know, and have us as fans be able to watch this, I believe, longest rivalry in the history of college football.
All right. Saturday, 1:00, and let's hope Rashad Bateman and Tanner Morgan have the game of their lives.
Yeah, I think that's what they're going to need. You know, on the positive note, you know, the Gophers did find a way to win against Purdue. They're not going to go with only one win on the season. That's a big positive. I'm thankful that there is football as we're going into Thanksgiving, that we get the opportunity to watch this. Obviously want people to stay safe, you know, from this whole pandemic, but it has been fun to have that as an outlet, while many of us are kind of locked at home or trying to keep distance from other people. And we appreciate all of you that have jumped on board and listened to the to our podcast. We have a ton of fun making it. We want to thank Burns Insurance and the Goal Line Club for sponsoring us. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.